You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison and WORTFM.org. Listener-sponsored community radio. The 8 o'clock buzz will be up after the BBC News. Please stay tuned.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Bluestem Jazz, presenting Gustavo Cortinas' Crisis Knows No Borders at the North Street Cabaret on Saturday, April 12th at 8 p.m. Composer and percussionist Gustavo Cortinas brings melodic and uplifting compositions rooted in social justice. He is joined by Mark Feldman, John Arabagon, and Dave Miller. More information and tickets are available at bluestemjazz.org.
Hello, I'm Moira Alderson with the BBC News. Share prices worldwide have surged in response to Donald Trump's decision to suspend additional tariffs on countries other than China. A universal 10% US levy remains in place. Stock markets across Europe and Asia have registered big gains. The European Union has paused its planned retaliation against the US. A spokesman for the European Commission, Olaf Gill, had this message for Washington.
We appreciate that you have brought this pause on so-called reciprocal tariffs, and we in turn are now pausing our proposed countermeasures in order that we have the maximum space to consult with our member states, consult with our industry, and negotiate with the US. We're ready to make deals. Let's talk.
Meanwhile, China has insisted it won't give in to pressure from President Trump over tariffs, but says it is willing to negotiate. The Chinese Foreign Ministry said Beijing wouldn't back down, but later the Commerce Ministry said the door to talks was still open. However, there's some optimism among Chinese officials, as Nick Marsh explains.
They've been preparing for something like this for quite some time. They knew this scenario could eventually pan out, and their calculation is pretty simple. They think that the United States needs China more than China needs the United States when it comes to trade. Because if American consumers can't buy cheap Chinese goods, whose cheap goods are they going to buy, at least in the short term? And when it comes to Chinese manufacturers, well, they've got their own massive domestic market they can sell to, and they've got the rest of the world that they can sell to as well.
The US and Russia have carried out another prisoner swap, the second since Donald Trump returned to office. President Putin has pardoned and freed Ksenia Karelina, a US-Russian dancer convicted of treason for donating $50 to support humanitarian work in Ukraine. In return, the US has released Arthur Petrov, a Russian-German dual national accused of conspiring to smuggle sensitive US-made microelectronics to Russia. Defence ministers from Ukraine's allies are meeting in Brussels to discuss how to support Kyiv in the event of a peace deal with Russia. The gathering, which is being hosted by Britain and France, will focus on plans for a multinational peacekeeping force. Jonathan Beale has this report.
There is still no sign of a ceasefire, but Britain and France are pressing ahead with plans to prepare for one and to provide Ukraine with some security guarantees. There's still no detail about how many countries would be willing to put boots on the ground or how many troops might be involved. What is clear is that it would be nothing close to the hundreds of thousands suggested by President Zelensky to police any ceasefire. Russia's already made clear it won't accept any NATO troops in Ukraine.
World news from the BBC.
WORT is excited to be in our 50th year, and to help celebrate, we are hosting the opening night of Madison's newest venue, the Atwood Music Hall. Join us on Friday, June 13th for a great night honoring Clyde Stubblefield. The night features performances from Mama Dig Down's Brass Band, The Funky JBs, VO5, Rare Element, DJ Trevor Banks, and Kaboombox. Andy Moore from the Friday 8 o'clock Buzz will host the evening celebrating 50 years of WORT and the grand opening of Madison's newest venue at 1925 Winnebago Street. Proceeds from the evening benefit WORT. Tickets are $25 in advance and available now at theatwoodmusichall.com. Be sure to shine up your dancing shoes and grab your tickets before they're gone.
Do you have an insatiable curiosity about the world? Do you find yourself provoking conversations with your friends and coworkers? Are you a strong listener? Then you should consider applying to become the next host of A Public Affair, WORT's daily hour-long call-in talk program. We're now accepting applications for this volunteer position. The next host will be the voice of Tuesday's show and join a stellar lineup of folks who engage listeners in conversations on social, cultural, and political issues of importance every day of the week. We're looking for someone who is curious and well-informed, comfortable speaking on air, someone who can think on their feet, and has at least 5 hours a week to prepare and host the show. And of course, we'll need you to be here every Tuesday from 12 to 1 p.m. Apply by May 2nd. To find out more information or apply, go to wortfm.org/talkhost.
Support for this program is provided by WORT's listener sponsors and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 2304. Local 2304 is a small local union with a big agenda, bringing power to the people by representing the workers who provide safe and reliable gas and electric service at MG&E. The professional union reps at Madison Teachers Incorporated and the staff collective right here at WORT. More information about the union is available on their website at ibew2304.com.
Good morning, it's 8:07 and you are tuned into WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin, your listener-sponsored community radio station. My name's Tony Castaneda, and I want to thank you for tuning in. This is the Thursday, April 10th edition of the 8 o'clock Buzz 2025. Eli is not here today. He's going to be in Las Vegas. So, but he'll be back next week, he promises. On today's show, I'll be speaking, later on in today's show, I'm going to be speaking with the staff counsel at Law Forward, Scott Thompson, and we're going to be talking about the Trump administration's attacks on the legal system and what that means for our system of checks and balances. And it's been a while, everybody. We have not had any weather here on the Thursday 8 o'clock buzz, mainly because we've been out of touch with our weatherman, but we are back in touch, and it's time to get back to Captain Settle and see what's going on. So stay tuned for that, too. What else we got? Oh, yes. Last Tuesday, a week ago, on Election Day, April 1st, I was able to cover the Susan Crawford victory celebration, yes, that's what we'll call it, at the former Inn on the Park there on the square. And I was able to cover the events there as part of WRT's crack news department team. And I did some interviews there. So we'll be speaking with Norm Stockwell, and get his thoughts on the election. So stay tuned, everyone. As always, the views and opinions expressed here in the Thursday 8 o'clock buzz do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of WRT paid staff, our millions of volunteers, or our board of directors. The Thursday 8 o'clock buzz is for entertainment purposes only. So there. I do want to make an announcement here. Last couple of weeks, I've been playing some Amadou and Mariam, and unfortunately, Amadou, they're Malian blues singers, if you will, and you hear them a lot on my show. But Amadou Bogayoko, he passed away last week, so I don't know if you guys, if y'all heard that, but people were bringing that up, so I'm still going to play some of the latest Amadou and Mariam. That's all. It's just called that in honor of Amadou. Okay, everybody, stay tuned. Day 14, and you are tuned into WORT, and this is the Thursday 8 o'clock buzz, and I was going to be playing some segments from some interviews that I did last week, and especially one that I had done with Norm Stockwell, the publisher of the Progressive magazine, and I'm having a little difficulty here finding these in the file here, but don't worry, because I got the next best thing, if not even the better thing, is I'm going to be speaking with Norm in just a few minutes live. So we'll recreate that interview as much as I can remember. In the meantime, just enjoy a little bit more some Amadou. That was Mariam who was singing on that first one. That's his wife. And Yes, a great loss. But here's Amadou Sashour is the name of this album, song. It's 8:18, and you are tuned into WRT. This is the Thursday Buzz. Joining me on the line, I'm very pleased to have the publisher of the 116-year-old progressive magazine, Norm Stockwell. Norm, thanks for making yourself available.
Glad to be here, Tony. And magazine's 116 years old. I haven't been there quite that long yet, but
all right. Hey, well. It was good. It was nice to see you at the watch party over there for Judge Crawford last Tuesday, April 1st. We had a little interesting discussion there on the importance of that. Can you tell me a little bit about what you saw as the importance of that victory?
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge crowd at the Park Hotel, and very very jubilant crowd. I think everybody I talked to there pretty much said the same thing. Nobody expected that the win would be as significant in numbers as it was, and nobody expected that it would be as quick as it was. You know, the announcement, the concession by Brad Schimmel happened like an hour and a half after the polls closed, which was, everybody was expecting to be there till midnight or something, and it didn't end up that way. And then the other thing was the actual vote numbers. I mean, this election had probably record-breaking numbers for a spring election. It was more than 2 million votes, and It was a strong vote turnout on both sides. I mean, I think that's important to note. The Republican side that was supporting Brad Schimmel really got their voters out as well. But the Democratic side that was supporting Susan Crawford got more voters out by a significant number. It was like a 10% victory. The the numbers, the 10% victory was similar to the Janet Protasiewicz win the year before, but the difference was that there was a lot more votes cast in this election.
Supposedly,
and I guess the other thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I just say the other thing that you and I talked about that night was really kind of the significance of the money in this election. Yes. I mean, it was more than $100 billion went into this race, which is just obscene, particularly when you think about the fact that the millionaire and billionaire donors that were coming in on both sides, but one out of every $5 in that election came from Elon Musk personally. And that was something that Wisconsin voters did not want. They did not want an outsider coming in, telling them how to vote, wearing a cheese head at a rally and trying to, force the vote with his money. And the Wisconsin voters did not go for that. And so that was, I think, a big difference in this election.
Speaking of which, I remember in that interview last week, you call it a cheese hat, and I had to correct you there.
It's
probably known as a cheese hat. So I was going to talk about the insane amount of money, and again, you said one out of every $5 came out of Elon Musk's pocket. Now, do you think that is there a lesson to be learned from either Democrats or Republicans saying, well, this is getting out of hand, and we spent all that money and you didn't win? Do you think this is going to, are they going to double down? Like $100 million, the most expensive Supreme Court race ever in the country and probably the world, no doubt. Are we going to spend $200 million next time or what? Where's it going?
Yeah, I think that a lot of people on both sides of the aisle are looking at this and saying, there's too much money in politics. And it's something that, particularly on the left, on the liberal, on the Democratic side, we've heard for many years the problem of money buying elections. And Wisconsin's Supreme Court race this year was just such a poster child for that problem. And so I think that you will see some move in that direction, people trying to figure out ways to limit that. You even heard that from Republican analysts and Democratic analysts, that this was just over the top in terms of money trying to buy this Supreme Court seat. So I think we'll see some at least push in that direction. Whether we'll see any change in the near future, I don't know. Wisconsin's going to have a Supreme Court election again next year, and another one the year after that. So we'll be the case study of whether whether those changes go into effect. But I guess I have to say one other thing though, and that is that even though Elon Musk and his money did not win the Supreme Court seat, I think that they did make a difference in getting the vote turnout for the very poorly written and dangerous constitutional amendment about voter ID. And so that is now enshrined in our state constitution. And as one person pointed out, it doesn't, the amendment as written doesn't allow for changes in technology. So right now, it says you have to have a photo ID. Well, what does that mean in 2028 or 2030 or 2035 when we have new technologies for establishing the person's identification? It's enshrined in the Constitution. It would have to be a new constitutional amendment if suddenly we were going to use, thumbprints or microchips or whatever to establish our ID. So,
on that issue, some people were concerned that it's going to lead to the road of requiring people to bring birth certificates when they're going to register as proof of registration. That's going to lead to further need for unnecessary documentation. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, I was actually talking to somebody about this issue because Trump, of course, is also, trying to get this into law nationally as well. And, for instance, in the case of birth certificates, if you were born in Chicago, Illinois in the 1950s, there's no way to get an original copy of your birth certificate anymore because there was a flood in downtown Chicago a couple of decades ago now. But all of those records were destroyed because they were in a storage facility underneath a building in downtown Chicago. And so that's just one example. There's lots of reasons why people might not have a birth certificate or a passport, which is the other ID that people have been talking about. And so, you know, the trying to create laws that force people to bring IDs, of course, when the voter ID law in Wisconsin passed a couple years ago, there was a big flurry because the University of Wisconsin student IDs did not qualify because they didn't include, you know, was it the fee date paid or something? There was, you know, and so they had to come up with a separate ID, which is a whole extra cost. So all of these things make these voter ID bills very, very difficult and very much a tool of voter suppression, because a lot of people are going to just not go to the polls because they don't want to be confronted and questioned about their ID. They don't want to have to, you know, face the embarrassment of not having the right voter ID. I've seen lots of interviews with people coming out of polling places in other states crying because they said, I voted at this place for, you know, all of my life, but now they're not letting me in because I don't have this, you know, correct ID. But they're embarrassed as much as angry about it. And so that's the kind of tool of voter suppression that these voter ID bills represent.
Well, just winding down here, I'm speaking with Norm Stockwell, the publisher of the Progressive magazine. Tuesday's victory, April 1st, the Wisconsin Supreme Court a victory. Was that a victory for the progressive movement?
Oh, I think that Susan Crawford is going to be a very, very good judge on the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. And I think there are a number of cases that are going to be coming before that court in the months and years to come during her term, where there will be chances for progressive rulings by that state Supreme Court. So I think we should all look forward to that. And the court's going to have what they call a liberal majority. The court's going to have a majority of justices that that vote on the liberal and progressive side for a number of years now because of the way the election cycles work.
Well, in that sense,
it was a very important election, yes.
Well, was this a repudiation of Trump and Musk policies up to this point?
I think it definitely stood out as a slap back at the policies of Donald Trump and even more of his unelected associate Elon Musk. I also thought that the huge demonstrations, not only here in Madison but around the country on April 5th, are another example of that. There was Michael Moore writes that it was probably the largest single day of demonstrations in history. He cites numbers of like 5 to 6 million people in cities and towns across the United States. And so I think that it definitely is a sign that people are really, really unhappy with what's going on. And, you know, in response to that, of course, what Trump is doing is he's doubling down, and the things coming out of Washington are fast and furious right now. So I think we need to, you know, buckle our seatbelts for a rough ride and a long struggle here to respond to this.
All right. Norm Stockwell, the publisher of the Progressive magazine. Thank you. It's almost like we're, I'm back in time to last Tuesday, but thanks for helping me out here at the last minute. All right. Thanks a lot,
Tony.
All right. Take care.
Bye now.
All right. In a minute, we're going to get a weather report from the one and only Captain Settle. You know what I'm saying?
Flakange
Get ready now for the number one weatherman in the whole country. It's time for Captain Seto. Captain, good morning.
How are you?
Good, man. It's been a while, man. How are you?
It has been on. I've been on assignment here in rural Wisconsin, checking the temperature of the community.
And what have you found?
That it's mostly very right wing. Life was very encouraging on April 5th, and we can talk about that in a minute after the weather, unless you want to talk about something else.
No, anyway, let's talk about the weather first.
The weather. Anyway, it's going to be chilly today. I think it's raining down there at the moment, mm-hmm. a little. And highs today only in the mid-40s, but the next 4 days after that, we're going to have a gorgeous weekend. Highs in the mid to low 60s from Friday through Monday, then it cools off again a little. But basically, spring's on the way. And the weekend looks fantastic. Highs, sunny to partly sunny with highs in the low 60s. So, you know, you might want to, you know, get the golf clubs out, start swinging the tennis rackets, maybe get out the grills. It looks like it's going to be a sweet weekend.
Wow, great. That sounds great, Captain. That's a good one. Now, some listeners might not know that you're like three to four hours north of here, straight north.
Yep. We're about an hour northwest of Wausau.
All right. And I understand, someone wanted to know last night if there was going to be, if there's still snow up there. What's the situation?
No, actually, there's snow in the air as we speak. I mean, it's sort of like drizzle with, you know, the wintry mix. So there's a little snow in the air. We got I wouldn't even call it a dusting. You can look at a few spots like in the driveway or around the edges of the tall grass here, where there's a tiny bit of snow that's already melting off. But no, we're basically done. There might be a little snow in the woodlots, you know, that where it's mm-hmm. shaded or on the north side of hills and things. But no, the snow is about 98% gone around.
Well, here. Now, you know, Wisconsin's been in a drought for a while. Has this affected the drought conditions, or are we still considered?
We'll take all the moisture we can get. I would say offhand there has been at least light drought here for almost 2 years. It's basically we had 2 years ago, we had a pretty wet spring, and then about the middle of May 2023, things started to dry out, and we've been in light drought conditions ever since.
All right. Now, you mentioned that on April 5th, of course, millions of people took to the streets, not only in this country, but also up there in Hooterville. And you guys had...
right.
What happened, man?
What happened was that they had, you know, they have demonstrations or gatherings all over up here. They had one in Rhinelander, which we went to. There was one in Ashland. There was one even in Phillips, which is the county seat for this county. I don't know how many people showed up there. It was nothing like the 40,000 or 50,000 there in Madison. But it was, you know, it was thrown together very quickly. It wasn't very well organized, but it was a wonderful, wonderful gathering of about somewhere between 300 and 400 people in a community as conservative and rural as Rhinelander was very encouraging.
Mm-hmm. And what was the response from passersby?
Oh, mostly I would say a couple of people gave speeches, including me, and then we marched down to Stephen Street, which is the main drag there in Rhinelander, and lined up along the street, like seemed to happen a lot of rural, like at Ashland it happened, and Phillips it happened. And I would say that about 80% of the cars that went by, at least, would honk. Some people even had signs they showed us in the window, you know, gave us the thumbs up. But I would say at least 80% did. Now, there were, of course, a few Trumpansies that went by in their pickup trucks with their straight pipes and, like, you know, like made a point of, like, you know, showing off. But No, the support was overwhelmingly positive.
All right, good. What's your take on the last week's election of Justice Crawford?
I think it's a step in the right direction. Certainly she's going to be a much better judge and start righting the ship politically and in terms of civil liberties in this state much more than that fascist foot servant Mr. Schimmel was. I'm very happy it happened.
All right. Well, Captain, what else have you been doing up there? It's been a while, man. You know, I got to tell you, truthfully, somebody got a hold of me, listener, and they were saying, hey, do you want me to come and do weather on your show, man? You know, they thought you died or something, or that you...
guest weather guy? Absolutely fine.
I said no, man. We ain't having no scabs around here. I said, Captain's still the weatherman for the Thursday Buzz. It's just we haven't been able to fit him in all the time, and, you know. But so it's good to check in with you. What else you been up to, man?
We're trying to put together, Susan and I, what we're trying to organize is what we call sort of food safety networks. One of the things we are interested in is beginning seed and plant start exchanges, just to get people to come together and, like, you know, you have an extra 200 carrot seeds that you're not going to use. You could, you know, share them with somebody else who'll give you petunia seeds or whatever. And, like, maybe you got ambitious and started 40 tomato plants and you're only going to use 10 of them, then maybe give them away to others. It's just start to build food security networks.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, nobody knows what's going to go on with the price of food. So I think we're seeing a lot of people that are starting to pay more attention to their backyard gardens.
Yes, absolutely. And quite frankly, I don't think there's anything more empowering than eating something you grew. I mean, even if it's only one cherry tomato plant that you had in your window well, or you some oregano or basil that you grew in your window well, eating something, consuming something, and sharing that with loved ones that you grew is very empowering. So, you know, Susan's the master gardener. I'm just the hired help. And we've been gardening now for like the last 15, 16 years since we've been up here. And we were doing some of it in Madison, and I think it's a way of empowering oneself. I keep using that word, but it's a way of, like, you know, getting in touch with how the cycle of life works.
And not to mention it's building community.
Yes.
Growing community. Well, Captain, it was a pleasure, man, to hear from you again. Can we have the weather report?
Oh, yeah, what it looks like is it's chilly and wet today in, like, your classic early spring weather. But the next 4 days, the weather down there is going to be, cloudy tomorrow, but highs in the mid to upper 50s. Hmm. And then the weekend looks spectacular, 60s in a sunny both days, and then basically almost 60 on Monday. And then it cools off and then warms back up next week. So basically I think the worst is over. I think the sapping season is over pretty much everywhere in this part of the world. And I would get out and do things this weekend because it's going to be gorgeous.
Well, when is a morel mushroom season going to be happening, you think?
I'm not the person to ask about that. I don't know the first thing about mushrooms other than those weird ones I've taken at one time or another in my life.
All right, Captain. It's great to talk to you and check in. And don't worry, man. I'm never going to give up your job.
And I expect to be paid five times as much as what I got paid before. And unfortunately, five times nothing is still nothing.
And, I'll call you later and tell you who wanted to take your job. No, I'm kidding. All right, man. Take care, Captain.
Please, my guest.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Good to hear from you. And everybody out there, be safe, be kind, and have a safe flight to any height.
There you go. All right, man. Take care. We'll see you.
Okay, bye-bye.
There he is, everybody. He is not dead. He is it's Easter, so he has risen. The captain is back. In a minute, we're going to be speaking with the staff counsel for Law Forward, Scott Thompson. So
In the meantime, we're going to listen to some more Amadou and Miriam.
Avec le chat qui joue avec le chien, les chiens aussi avec les lions. On ne sait plus où donner la tête. La vérité s'est bien éloignée. Le maçon a déjà pris sa place. La violence qui frappe tout le monde. On ne sait plus où donner la tête.
C'est la confusion, c'est l'illusion, on ne sait plus où donner la tête. C'est la confusion, c'est l'illusion, on ne sait plus où donner la tête.
Hello, Scott, are you there?
I am.
Oh, great. I thought I lost you there for a second.
No, still here.
All right. Well, thank you. Joining me on the phone now, I'm very pleased to have Scott Thompson. He is the staff counsel at Law Four, which is, I guess we could call them a progressive law firm here, based out of Madison, Wisconsin, and, well, it's a statewide outfit. Thank you very much, Scott, for being on the show this morning.
I am glad to be here. Good morning.
All right. Well, the main reason I wanted to have you on is I wanted to talk about the recent deals that big law firms had just made with the Trump administration and Donald Trump's attack on the legal system here. The law firm that I'm talking about is, of course, they got a huge name. We'll just call them Weiss. And Paul Weiss, Rifkin, Wharton, and Garrison.
Lots of last names.
Yes, so we'll just call him Paul Weiss for now, or the firm. Came out, and they made a deal with the Trump administration. Can you first talk about what the Trump administration was demanding from that law firm first?
Well, it was less about what they were demanding and more about what they were forcing upon that firm and other firms. Since the outset of the second Trump administration, the president has used his executive order power to target these firms and do things such as restrict their security clearance, demand investigations into these private companies, and even prohibit them from setting foot in federal buildings or property. And so what I think about when I think about this is mostly that these firms are under attack.
Now, is this legal? I was like, wait, how can he do that? How can you just say, hey, you guys can't come into our federal courthouses and defend someone? I mean, what if I'm being charged with something in a federal, I got some federal charges against me, and I'm like, I need this law firm to represent me. I don't get how he can do that.
Well, so there's a short answer to this and a long answer to this. I'll start with the short answer.
Okay.
The short answer is that it's not legal. In, for example, the lawsuit brought by the firm Perkins Coie under a very similar order, they have successfully secured an early injunction to stop the most odious aspects of the order. And the reason they were able to do that is because a federal court determined that they are very likely to succeed on the merits of their claim. And their claim is, in essence, that this order infringes on the firm's First Amendment rights. And so on that basis, it seems to be illegal.
All right, so then what is the damage then by the Weiss Rifkin a firm caving in so quickly? How do you explain that? Can you explain that?
Well, I mean, I think that when we take a step back, it's important to understand that American democracy depends on a respect at the highest levels of power for the principles that support our Constitution. And when that power, that awesome power of the federal government, is perverted to retaliate against private businesses, that is taking a pretty incredible step. And so I think out of fairness to the firms, you know, they're under an incredible amount of pressure. And at the same time, you know, they're profit-seeking entities that are doing what they can to survive. Now, as to the principles of American democracy, you know, obviously there's a problem here. Because in settling, if you want to call it that, these disputes, the firms are sort of, I would argue, foregoing the rights that they have under the Constitution to allow the federal government to interfere in their affairs. Now, obviously, that's their choice. They made a choice to do that. But I think it is clear from the litigation we've seen from firms like Perkins Coie, firms like WilmerHale, that there really is an aspect of illegality to these orders that can be vindicated in our court system. It's just a matter of whether or not these firms want to stand up against it.
We're talking about some of the largest firms in the country. You know, what does it mean when some of these largest, most powerful firms, and I guess you could say they take up progressive causes also, as they have in the past. What does it mean that a lot of them have not spoken up? I mean, you kind of just explained it is about money, and the Brad Karp guy that's leading the Paul Weiss Rifkin thing. He said he put out an email and said that he did it for the to secure the future of the company, and that they could keep a lot of their big clients, if you will, and in that system.
Well, I think a couple of things about this. On some level, when I think about these issues in my head, it's easy for me to say that, you know, these firms should stand up against these orders. But I think the truth is that when the awesome power of the federal government is bearing down at not only the company that you're running, but literally every employee there, thinking about that in your gut and really understanding it there is a whole different thing. So I think it's important to focus the attention on what the government is doing here, but also to remember that there are firms standing up. And just for full disclosure, Law Forward is currently co-counsel with at least one of these firms, WilmerHale. And here in Wisconsin, we are fighting to make sure that voters with disabilities have equal access to the ballot. And that's something that we have been partnering with the firm WilmerHale for years now. In advance of the 2022 midterm elections, we worked with their offices to make sure that voters with disabilities in Wisconsin had the ability to use assistance to return their absentee ballots if they needed it. And so the types of causes that these firms are working for support our democracy. And when they stand up, I think it's important to applaud them for doing so.
Yes. Here we have the Trump administration. What does it mean? He's going after the legal profession. At the same time, they're attacking a big portions of the judicial system, going after judges who have made over, 100 claims against the Trump administration as far as it pertains to deportations and other things. You got an administration that's not only going after lawyers, but they're going after judges. How do you explain that? What are we to take of that?
Well, I think as an initial matter, it's just something to reflect on as a sad moment in our democracy. But on some level, the other way to think about this is simply about power. I think it has been clear since the first Trump administration that when the president recognizes the limits of his power, he targets those limits. And so he has criticized, for example, the Fed, which he also does not specifically control. And so he doesn't control the judiciary. He has appointed a large number of judges throughout the federal bench, including, of course, at the Supreme Court. But ultimately, these individuals are asked to look at the law without fear or favor for the parties before them and make decisions. And I think that's been clear since the beginning of the first and into the second Trump administration that occasionally these courts are ruling against him. And that limit on his power, I think, clearly bothers him. And so along with his allies in Congress, they've been calling, for example, for impeaching certain judges. And and even Chief Justice Roberts has had to sort of push the brakes on this type of rhetoric. And I think that's important. Mm-hmm. It's important to remember that this is how our democracy is supposed to work. We're supposed to have judges who call balls and strikes when our political actors, you know, get outside of their lane, if you will.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with the staff counsel at Law Forward, Scott Thompson, talking a little bit about, well, we're talking about the Trump administration attacks on the legal profession. One of the things that struck me is that a lot of these high-priced law firms were doing a lot of their work is pro bono. How does that work out?
Well, I think that many people realize that high-powered law firms command, you know, large hourly rates. But at the same time, it is also true that these firms generally have quite extensive pro bono practices, where they do what they can to use the inherent power in their institutions to help those that might not have the type of money that would be required to otherwise pay their bills. And so it's quite common for folks to help out nonprofit organizations, individuals in confinement who have civil rights claims. Mm-hmm. And so it is pretty common for these larger firms to have pro bono practices where they support efforts that might not command really any fees for the firm. That's a pretty standard part of the legal profession. And in fact, in Wisconsin, the state bar here specifically encourages lawyers to take up pro bono cases. That's really just part of the job. Mm-hmm. And I think to attack lawyers for doing that is really a tragedy. Mm-hmm. It is really striking at what I think the best part of the legal profession is, which is just making sure that everyone has an opportunity to vindicate their rights.
Right. Well, what I thought was strange then is that part of the deal that they made with the Trump administration is that they were going to provide certain amounts, $100 million or $40 million in pro bono legal services for causes that Mr. Trump championed. Does that mean also that Paul Weiss, we might expect them to not take up other cases that they used to be known for taking up so-called progressive causes?
Speak for Paul Weiss specifically, but I can say that in the legal community, there certainly have been conversations about what this will mean for pro bono representation from these firms for other causes that they've historically supported. It seems like that is really in jeopardy. But still, I think that part of this remains to be seen. Mm-hmm. I also saw that $100 million agreement. I'm not sure exactly how that will play out. I'm not sure really what will come next. But I think it's fair to say that the federal government targeting the largest firms in the country for what they've done is going to have some sort of effect. We're just going to have to see what it is.
All right. That's kind of what my last question was going to be, is how is this affecting our democracy? But you kind of answered that there.
Well, let me say a little bit more. Uh-huh. I think that one of the most important aspects of the legal profession is respecting the lawyers on the other side, even though you might disagree with what they're doing. And so Law Forward frequently goes up against the same group of lawyers who represent different interests than we do. But I will tell you firsthand that we have good relationships with them. Even during the very contentious litigation surrounding the plot to overturn the 2020 election, Law Forward prosecuted that case with the help of Stafford Rosenbaum here in Madison, and also an outfit at Georgetown. But the lawyers that were on the other side of this case, we dealt with them very well. Mm-hmm. They were respectable individuals, and I'm not afraid to say that. They did their best to represent their clients' interests, right. And that's okay.
That's what you're supposed to do, yeah.
Exactly. And so I think it's bad for our democracy when there is some deterioration of that sort of inherent agreement that, like, this is just what lawyers do. Once that gets thrown out the window, we're sort of operating in a bit of a brave new world.
All right. Scott Thompson, the law staff counsel for Law Forward. Scott, I want to thank you very much for being on. It was very informative.
Of course.
Discussion. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. Yep. Take care.
Okay. Run a little bit behind here. It's 9 o'clock, and stay tuned for Jeff Spitzer, Resnick, and Hajira. This is WRT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. And thank you, Mary Lou, on the phones. Thank you, Charlie. Thank you, Peggy, Mike Cullen, and Eli. Forget it, man. All right. In a minute, the Insurgent Radio Kiosk. Maybe. Let's see if it goes. Let's see how it plays today. Go.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Thursday, April 10th. This is Bird Note. Wouldn't it be great to change places with a bird? To fly freely, to perch on the highest branch, even to share the joys of building a nest. Just like that, your wish is granted. You switch places with a robin. The flying part is fun, but there's work to do. There's a nest to build. What would be the human-sized equivalent of a robin's nest? An average robin weighs less than 3 ounces. Let's say an average